Good to be with you this morning and be able to worship with you and once again to study a portion of God's Word. For the last few weeks, we've been studying Hebrews chapter 11. It's one of the great chapters of the Bible, and it's one of those chapters that talks, how do we live by faith? And what does it mean to say that we're a people of faith, or that we live by faith and not by sight? And I think the examples we see in the Old Testament of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph that we'll look at today show us what it means to live by faith and looking at these men. If you look with me at the scripture reading at the very beginning, look at what it says in Hebrews chapter 11, beginning in verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of a land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He's prepared for them a city. Now, if you look at what is said, do we think of ourselves like these men, as strangers and exiles here on this earth? He mentions earlier on that we looked at a few weeks ago that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob never received their promises. They always lived in tents. And the idea of living in tents, they never owned the land that had been promised to them. They could only know that it was going to be theirs into the future. And so they lived as aliens or strangers. Or he uses that word exile a number of times. We'll see that in the New Testament as well. And an exile is one that's not living in his homeland. He's living in a foreign land. Do we think of ourselves as being exiles here on this earth? One of the ideas we see through Hebrews is that this world is not to be our home. It's not to be our goal to make this world the best it can be, because we're only an exile here. We're only passing through. We sing songs like that, but I don't know if we always really think about what that means. It means that our goal is not to make this world the best place it can be, because this world, we're only an exile here. We're a stranger. We're a sojourner. We're only passing through. Peter says much the same thing in 1 Peter. Look at what... Actually, before we get to Peter, look at these verses in the Old Testament, because they bring out the idea that we have two kingdoms. We have the kingdom of this world, and we have a heavenly kingdom that we're searching to. And as we go through this world, we're not to make this world the best place it can be, because this world is against the world of our kingdom, the kingdom of light. Look at Proverbs 14. The fear of the Lord, one has strong confidence. Hopefully you'll see that as we go through, that we have confidence. The fear of the Lord is that idea of honoring and knowing that God is God. If you remember back in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, to please God, we must believe that He exists and He rewards those who seek Him. That's the fear of the Lord, to honor God as God. The fear of the Lord is the fountain of life. In other words, there really is not life here in this world. This world will pass away. True life comes only from God. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, and one may turn away from the snares of death. The wages of sin is death, the end result of this world. Psalms 2, the kings of this earth set themselves, the rulers take counsel against the Lord and against His anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. You see this in the life of these men, and hopefully we see that around us today. This world is against the Lord's kingdom. And you cannot be a friend of this world and seek the things of this world and also seek the things of the Lord. The two are opposed to each other. We saw in Psalms 10 a number of weeks ago, in his pride the wicked does not seek Him, that is, seek God. And all his thoughts, there is no room for God. And that's the way I see the world around us so much. There is just no room for God. All the things that we surround ourselves with, if we're not careful, they'll just squeeze God out of our lives. And so we have to be sure, are we walking by faith? And by walking in faith, we mean, are we putting our trust into God? Or are we putting our trust into the things of this world and all the things around us. Now let's look over to Peter, and you notice how similar what Peter says goes along with our message in Hebrews. And if you call on Him as Father, who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, in other words, there is a time we'll have to give account for our lives. Conduct yourself with fear throughout the time of your exile. Now He's talking to each one of us. We should think of ourselves as being exiles here in this world, is what Peter's saying. Knowing that you are ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your fathers, the ways of this world are vain or futile. Not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. A few verses later, Beloved, I urge you as sojourners or strangers and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh that wage war against your soul. This world wages war against us. We have to decide, are we going to be part of the world or not? When we look at Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, they chose a different path. As we saw a couple weeks ago, Abraham left his homeland and went to a land he didn't know where it was. But he went by faith in God. And that's what it means to walk by faith. I'm going to end this section with a quote from Luke 16. We look at some of the great chapters of the Bible. And Luke 16 is one that we have preached on before. But it's one of those that brings out this contrast between the things of the world and the things of God. And listen what he says. This is Jesus talking to the Pharisees. The Pharisees were lovers of money, and I'm afraid some of us might fall into that category. Heard all of those things, and they ridiculed him, that is Jesus. And he said, You justify yourself before men, but God knows your hearts. What is exalted among men, or what is exalted in this world, is an abomination in the sight of God. So often we seek the things of this world. But the things of this world are not always, and quite often are not, the things of God. And we need to realize, we don't live for the things of this world. We live for the things that are of God. We don't seek the things of this world. We seek a heavenly kingdom. Our citizenship is in heaven. It's not here. We're exiles on this world. We're strangers and sojourners. It's our goal is not to make this world the best place it can be. Because we're an exile here. Now look with me just a few minutes at these men. Because these men knew that they were walking by faith. And by walking by faith, it has the idea that we don't always know what's ahead of us. We like to think we're in control. One of the things the world tells you is that you can take control of your life. Well, you're not in control of your life. Things happen to you that you do not have control of. You don't have control of the future. We walk by faith, not by sight. We don't know what the future holds. Ecclesiastes, the writer, said this, I have seen something else under the sun, that the race is not to the swift, the battle not to the strong, nor food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor the learned. But time and chance happens to them all. Moreover, no one knows the hour when his hour will come. We don't know what the future holds for us. Time and chance happens to everyone. Walking by faith means we know not what the future holds, but we know who holds the future. And that is our God. And He holds that future, and we can have faith in Him. Look with me now in a few minutes at these four men. We looked 2 weeks ago at Abraham. And look at before we get into looking at these men, I thought it'd be good just to look at the family tree. Because a lot of times we talk about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and this shows basically the family tree of these men. We saw a couple weeks ago, Abraham had been promised a son in his old age, and that was Isaac, who was born to Abraham and to Sarah. And then Isaac has two sons, two twins, also born when Isaac was getting to be an old man, Jacob and Esau. And they fight their whole lives, pretty much. In fact, Jacob lies and cheats Esau. Esau allows himself to be cheated. They don't get along very well. In fact, at one point, Esau makes an oath, you know, as soon as dad dies, I'm gonna wipe you out. So Jacob leaves. And Jacob goes and lives with Laban, his uncle. Now, when Jacob goes to live with Laban, he's already lied to his father, he's cheated his brother, and he lives about 20 years with Laban, his uncle, and that whole time he's in conflict with Laban. Jacob is one that starts off very poorly, but ends pretty well. And you see the transformation in his life. Jacob has 12 sons, which we call the 12 tribes of Israel. First, if you remember the story of Jacob, he falls in love with Rachel. But in order to marry Rachel, he has to marry her older sister first. And so he marries both Rachel and Leah. And Leah bears him 4 sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. And when Rachel sees she's not able to bear sons, then she gives her servant to Jacob, and he has 2 sons by Rachel's servants. And so Leah, not to be outdone, gives her servant to Jacob, and he has 2 sons by Zilpah, Leah's servant. Finally, Rachel has 2 sons. Before that even, Leah has 2 more. Issachar and Zebulun are born to Leah, and finally, at the very end, Rachel has 2 sons, Joseph and Benjamin. Now, I put Joseph's sons on here because one of the things in the Bible, it talks about the 12 tribes of Israel, but there's more than 12 tribes of Israel. That's sort of a round number that they use. If you notice, there are 12 sons of Israel, Jacob's name being changed to Israel. But when they go into the promised land, the land tribes are different from the 12 sons. And sometimes you see this mentioned too. Because Levi will become the priest will all come from the tribe of Levi. And he's not part of the census, and he's not part of the land. Instead, Joseph's 2 sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, will become tribes. And so the 12 land tribes are the 12 sons minus Levi plus Manasseh and Ephraim. And so those end up being the 12 land tribes that inherit the promised land. So this gives you basically the family tree of Abraham going through the 12 tribes that will inherit the promised land that God has given to Israel. Now look with me back at the story of Abraham itself. And here we have an interesting, at the very end of Abraham's life, the faith and obedience of Abraham. And one of the things you'll see as you go through Abraham's life is that he lived his faith. It says, By faith Abraham, when tested, offered up Isaac. And he received the promises, was in fact offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac your offspring will be named. He considered that God was able to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Now this is also mentioned over in James. If you go through the whole story, and we will walk through it a little bit, Abraham's son Isaac now was roughly a teenager. We don't know exactly how old, but 14, 15 in that age group. God commands Abraham to offer Isaac, the only son he loves, or the son he loves that the promises to come through, as a burnt offering sacrifice. This is referred to in the book of James, and notice what James says about it. Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works? Now, James uses the word works, and sometimes that causes problems because people think, well, you're working for your salvation, you're going to earn your salvation. If you substitute the word living or your life for works, it really brings out what James is saying. What James is saying is Abraham lived his faith. And so he said, was not Abraham, our father, justified by his life when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his life. And life, his faith was completed by his life. And the scriptures was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. And he was called a friend of God. Now James goes back and quotes the very verse that Paul does at the very beginning of Abraham's life, before he had done anything really good or bad, he believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. He was right with God. But as James says, his life then completed his faith. And so his faith and his life go together. You cannot separate faith and obedience. Abraham lived his faith, is what James says, and that's exactly what Hebrews tells us. And so we see his faith by his life. and by his obedience, as we saw 2 weeks ago, the term faith and obedience are linked in the writings of John and Peter and Paul in chapter 8 of Romans that we looked at before. Now look with me at what the story really says. In Genesis 21, we have the quote, "Through Isaac your offspring will be named." Abraham had asked God, first, the promises come through Ishmael. And God says, no, you're going to have your son through your wife Sarah. And then he goes on and tells him that these promises that I've made to you, they're going to be fulfilled through Isaac. So it's not like Abraham can have another son later on and have the promises fulfilled. They have to come, they have to be fulfilled through Isaac. Then God says, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you. Now if you look at those two verses, you see there's a little bit of a conflict here. God tells Abraham that I'm going to fulfill my promises through Isaac. Then he tells Abraham, now I want you to go offer Isaac as a sacrifice. You see, it looks like, how can those both things happen? Ever have a time in your life where something happens and you just don't know how you're going to get through it? Maybe it's a death in family, maybe it's a sickness, maybe it's a loss of job, maybe it's a divorce or something else happens within your family and you don't know how you're going to get through that. That's what walking by faith is. We don't always can see the future. Abraham must have wondered, God, how can both these things be? It doesn't look like you can do both these things. And so it's almost like Abraham says, okay, God, I don't know how to do this. You've got a problem, God. You have to solve this. And that's where walking by faith is sometimes. We don't always have the answers. We don't always have the solutions. We can't always say, I know how I'm going to get through this. Walking by faith means we have to put our lives in the hands of God. And know that, God, you have the future in your hands. I just have to trust in you. And that's what Abraham does. He trusts in God. And notice in Genesis, the very last part. In Hebrews it says, figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back. This is what it says in Genesis. This is what, right when they're ready to offer the sacrifice, see, that is Abraham, said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship. And now look at this last phrase. Then we will come back to you. You notice what Abraham says? We will go over there and worship and do what God told us to do. And Abraham ties Isaac down and is ready to put the knife into his heart to kill him, to offer him as a burnt sacrifice. But Abraham has already said, we will return. Abraham knew that he was going to return with Isaac. And just like the Hebrew writer says, figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. That's the kind of faith that Abraham had. And that's what the writer in Hebrews wants us to see. We can live that way. Abraham lived that way. We too can live by faith in God, just like Abraham did. We won't always have the answers. There's going to be times in our lives when things happen. We don't know how we're going to get through these things. But if we have trust and faith in God, we can, just as Abraham did. Now look with me at the next two. Isaac, the son that allowed himself to be almost offered as a sacrifice. At the end of Isaac's life, he blesses Jacob and Esau. Now, if you go, actually, it's not quite the end of his life. He keeps thinking he's going to die, but he just never does. Isaac is one of those guys that thinks he's going to die, and about 40 years later, he does. But at this time, he's actually cheated by Jacob. Jacob dresses up and goes out and kills wild animals like Esau, the hunter. And he comes in and he tells Isaac, his father, that I'm really Esau. Now, you can bless me. And Isaac does bless him. And then, if you read through in Genesis, then when Isaac finds out that he blessed the wrong son, Isaac trembled very violently and said, who was it then who hunted game and brought it to me and I ate it before you? And I have blessed him. Now look at this last point. Yes, and he shall be blessed. What Isaac is saying is, I blessed the wrong son. I blessed Jacob. But he's going to stay blessed because I blessed him. The future is still going to be there. In other words, Isaac believed the promises of God now was going to be fulfilled. They were always going to be fulfilled, and they're going to be fulfilled now through Jacob. And that's God's plan, and that's what's going to happen. Isaac believed God's plan for the future. And it's a very similar, as we get into the next two, look at Jacob. Now, Jacob is one that we could spend a lot of time talking about Jacob. As we said, he starts off lying to his own father to cheat Esau out of his blessing. And he goes and lives with Laban, and for 20 years they basically go head to head with each other. When he comes back, before he meets with Esau, he wrestles all night with God. Go through and read Genesis and the account of Jacob. But you also see his transformation. And this is when he was actually dying. He comes, he's in Egypt now, and he blesses Joseph's two sons. Now, normally, the greater blessing goes to the elder son, and the elder son was Manasseh. And so when Jacob gets there, Jacob's really old, he doesn't see very good, and he puts his hands on the two sons' heads, and he puts his right hand over on Ephraim, and his left hand on Manasseh. And so Joseph sees this and says, "No, Dad, you got it backwards," and he tries to switch his hands. But Jacob says, "Oh no, this is the way it's going to be." And he blesses Ephraim with the greater blessing than Manasseh. He blesses them both, but Ephraim is going to be the greater of the two. Or actually his descendants would be. And that's exactly what happens. Ephraim becomes such a large tribe that when the kingdom is split in two, the northern kingdom is just known by the name Ephraim because it is the largest tribe by far. But what the writer of Hebrews wants us to see is that Joseph had faith, or Jacob had faith, in the future. He knew that God's plan was going to work out. And the same thing is the last one that we're going to look at today is Joseph. Now Joseph, you know the great story of Joseph. He goes down to Egypt. He becomes second to Pharaoh. But when he was getting ready to die himself, he told him, "Now when you go back to the land, take my bones with you. I don't want to be buried here in Egypt. I want you to bury me in the promised land that God promised our fathers." Now, he goes back. This is the promise that God had made to Abraham hundreds of years before. But Joseph believed it. And what he's saying is, there's going to come a time when you're going to leave Egypt and go back to this land that God's promised us. And when you do that, I want to be part of that. I want you to take my bones with you back to the promised land. Joseph believed in the promises of God. And that's really what the Hebrew writer wants us to see. That these promises of God, they're real. We may not always see them in our lifetime even. And these men, none of these men saw these promises in their lifetime. But they saw it in the future. We always are looking forward. This world is not where our reward will be. Just as it wasn't for these men. But we know the one who holds the future in his hand. And we have trust and faith in God, then we can be part of that, just as they were. Four things, and as we close our lesson. The first, do we honor God today as these men did? In the very beginning, it said God was not ashamed to be called their God. When Moses asked at the burning bush, which we'll hopefully take a look at in a week or so, Moses asked God, "Who are you, God?" And God says, "I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Now you think about what that means. It means that God was not ashamed to be called the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Think about you and I. If God was introducing himself to someone, would God say, "I'm not ashamed to be called the God of," and put your name there? You think God would do that? Would identify himself with you to that, be willing to be called by your name? In the Old Testament, being called by a name meant something. It meant who you were. And what God is saying, "I'm not ashamed to be called by the name Abraham and Isaac and Jacob." Now, these men weren't perfect. They did things that you can go back and look at, but always wasn't the very best. But they lived their faith in God. And because of that, their very lives gave honor to God so that God was not ashamed to be called by their name. And hopefully, he wouldn't be ashamed to be called by our names either. I don't know if you can think about, would God call himself by your name as he did Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? They believed in a heavenly city They did not put their faith in the things of this world. They were always sojourners and exiles, as we're called to be. And I don't know if we always think of ourselves as being exiles. We look at this world and we want to make this world the best place we can be. We don't think about the fact we are not at home here. Our citizenship is in heaven. And that's where we need to have, we're looking forward to that inheritance held in heaven by the very power of God Himself. We need to be living as alien and strangers, as giving honor to God by the way that we live. And finally, these men all believed in the promises of God. We need to make sure that we do too. Walking by faith means that even in times of our lives when we don't see how we're going to get from here to there, maybe things have happened to us and we don't know how we're going to get to the future, but we can. Walking by faith means we will get to the future because we know the one who holds the future is our God, and we put our faith and our trust in Him. These men lived their faith, and that's what the Hebrew writer calls us to do, to live our faith. Our faith is made complete by our lives, and just as these men lived it, we too can live it, and they can be an example to us. You go through their lives. They weren't always at the very top. Definitely Jacob wasn't. Even Isaac at times lies, and Abraham occasionally tells a lie here and there. These men weren't perfect men, but they walked by faith, and that's what we're called to do. And when we put our faith and trust in the Lord, we know we can walk to that heavenly kingdom, and that's where our reward will be. This morning, think about your life. You're walking away one way or the other. You're walking a path. Where is your life leading to? Are you journeying to the heavenly kingdom or a kingdom in this world? This world will all pass away. There's only one place that will stay for all eternity, and that's the heavenly kingdom which we're called to walk. If you haven't started that walk, why not start it today? And if you've already started it but you haven't been faithful to it, why not get back on that road that leads to that heavenly kingdom? If you need to come in any way, won't you come as together we stand and sing.